You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Saturday marked 100 days of lockdown in South Africa. In political speak, one uses this milestone of 3 months and some change to assess whether a new administration is starting to leave its imprint. Now, sadly for South Africa, the imprint is indeed clear and unmistakably full of trademark ANC gaffes, missteps and hubris, the sort of thing that have been all too common over the last 26 years. I've got Professor Alex van den Heerfer, Chair in the field of Social Security Systems Administration and Management Studies at Wits School of Governance, on the line. And Alex, you've written an excellent summary of where we veered off the needed roadmap of action in order for us to have used these 100 days effectively. If we go back to the 27th of March, what were the two strategies being employed to really motivate for a hard lockdown to ensure that we use that time wisely?
So the first would have been that we would have to implement an institutionalized prevention framework. And the second would be to be at least have the health services ready as a sort of a contingent to address the contingent risk of an uncontained epidemic, or one that at least we couldn't completely contain using prevention. But prevention had to be our first line of defense, and that needed to be invested in rapidly. And there was a lot of international precedent and a lot of public health experience on what should go into that.
And in terms of prevention, I mean, the numbers right now would seem to indicate that we failed dismally on that score. What needed to be done with the test, trace and track prevention strategy versus what was eventually delivered?
So we did have a bit of time to get a program going. We needed really by the end of April, and that's not just tied to the lockdown. By the end of the epidemic was not rocketing at that stage, not necessarily because of the lockdown itself, but just because of it's an early phase. So we needed by the end of April to have a substantial testing program in which we would have been testing at about 40,000 a day with about a sort of 24-hour turnaround at most, and a contact tracing platform that would also allow for very, very rapid contact tracing to the majority of people that had been in contact with anybody tested positive. That strategy only works if you have a small number of cases at that point in time, because you're keeping it low. You're responding to where the clusters are found, and you're testing and tracing around those areas. What we have as a problem, though, is that the public sector chose to implement its testing framework entirely through the National Health Laboratory Services. Private sector was essentially completely ignored for the purposes of strategic testing. And the private sector has expanded its testing, but it's just testing on a demand basis. And its capacity and the number of tests exceeds that of the private public sector quite significantly. If we combined the two together, we would actually have a very significant testing program, and we could have had one by the end of April. But what the public sector has said is that they had all sorts of bottlenecks internationally. But the private sector appears to have expanded despite accessing the same supply chain. So it doesn't appear plausible that, in fact, it was insurmountable. So that's on that score. And on the test contact tracing, we have no idea what government has really set up for contact tracing. There was a structure set up at the CSIR, and it's shrouded in mystery, and the provinces appear to be largely doing what they can when they can. So it's not very efficient. The two key strategies were never really implemented several months after after March. And in fact, the strategy we should have begun in January, which is when South Korea, for instance, began. They had everything in place in January.
And that really is where we've fallen down here, the fact that we haven't used the best available in the private sector to assist and augment and aid the public sector's efforts in all of this. While I think Professor van den Heerfer, a lot has been made of this newfound spirit of collaboration between the government and the private sector, one wonders how much of that is just carefully choreographed spin.
Yeah, I think that we haven't really, what you really required was a way of integrating the public and private response during this period, not just drawing on it. So if you were going to bring the private testing regime into a single strategy, you would have needed to have a very coherent platform for managing that. So you bring it, you essentially have to put it under a coherent, transparent, sort of unified command structure, so to speak, that everybody's willing to participate in. And then you need to drive it very flexibly and efficiently from that level. So we didn't do it in those areas. We didn't do it for PPE. We didn't do it effectively for even expanding services, which was very much a provincialized expansion on its own. And so Western Cape has done very different things to Gauteng. And even the prevention strategy in the Western Cape, which appears to have worked, has not been duplicated in Gauteng, for instance. So this failure of coordination, this centralization without expansion into our full capabilities in the country, is all part of the problem.
And I think coordination is critical here. If you're dealing with testing and you've got limited resources there, then what is that targeted testing and tracing strategy setting out to achieve? And if you can't answer those questions, then I agree with the likes of Professor Mahdi and others who've said, well, rather reserve and save your testing efforts for those on the front lines. Now, when we look at these new infection trajectories apparent in the Eastern Cape and Gauteng, are these the expected trajectories that were projected all along? That's certainly what certain politicians would have us believe.
No, they're not. I mean, I think it's got to deal with the spin. They're referring to model projections, which have nothing to do with what's happening in real life. All the epidemics internationally that have peaked entirely because of the interventions, the prevention interventions that have been introduced. So in the UK, it was the lockdown that they introduced, which they could actually operationalize and maintain, that turned the epidemic down. It didn't turn down because they reached herd immunity. It turned down entirely because they've stopped the virus from infecting people through limiting the ability of the virus to get to people. So those are two different things. Models can't do that. The models, if you look at the epidemic in South Africa, in many other countries, they've turned the epidemic to a downward trajectory. There's still a very, very substantial susceptible population that's left and not being infected. So the prevention strategy means that you have a lower peak entirely because you've strangled the ability of the virus to expand. So in South Africa, our upward trajectory we're seeing now is entirely a consequence of a failed prevention strategy. There's nothing else to it. And the danger is that we're not managing. If we don't get control over the prevention strategy, it's going to get very, very serious very quickly. And we're not in a position to reimpose any lockdown in South Africa. That horse is bolted. We basically have to prevent with everything else except a lockdown.
And in other words, the only tools available, and these are the same tools that you mentioned that are available to governments all over the world, and South Korea has been particularly effective at deploying these, is testing, tracking and tracing and managing outbreaks. It really isn't rocket science. So what we've struggled with is the coordination, and it's come at great cost. Professor van den Heerfer, a roughly 1.2 trillion price tag and growing. What have we acquired on the second strategy for that price? Do we have sufficient beds? From what I'm reading, we're already at full capacity in Gauteng and overflowing in the Eastern Cape in the public sector.
We haven't really added any additional beds in all this time, and it's quite difficult to do so. That can't be your entire strategy. The Western Cape did implement field hospitals that were genuine hospital beds supplied by oxygen, but you still have to have nurses and doctors for them. So if you're constrained on the supply side in access to nurses and doctors, you can have a physical bed there, but it's not going to make a lot of difference. So you will have to make a plan around that. So the one is the physical side of the infrastructure. In Gauteng, unbelievably, the field hospital is completely different to that in the Western Cape. They got it from furniture shops, the beds. they have no oxygen supply to the beds. And it's completely unclear whether they've got any staff to assist anybody. They can't be used for sick people. They can be used for people who are well, who are under quarantine, but they can't be used for actually treating seriously ill patients. So we're stuck with the hospital beds that we had in March. And that includes both the public and private. And it's important to note that the private sector beds are also filling up with medical scheme patients. So the epidemic has been impacting quite significantly on government employees who are all medical scheme members, frontline health workers, people running pharmacies, people running laboratory services, employers that are open and essential services, home affairs offices. So all of those people are actually responsible for increasing the numbers. And what's happening is now where we could potentially run out of critical care beds in the private sector just on private sector patients if it continues on the current trends.
Which all begs the question, for 1.2 trillion rand and counting, what did all of this buy?
I'm seriously concerned that we got very, very little for that money. The platforms that were meant to be implemented, and I use the term platform because you would a platform as being a coherent structure created to achieve a very focused objective. And in an epidemic, there are very focused objectives. The one would be your testing program. There's no coherent platform for that. There's no coherent platform for contact tracing. There's no there is assistance to get PPE into the system, but in fact that it would have been better to have centralized that and created a very central transparent platform for that. We shut down our own domestic textiles industry and plastics industry during the lockdown, so they couldn't even produce PPE during that period. So the hospital beds haven't been expanded, and it's very difficult to expand them. So yeah, we spent a great deal of money purportedly creating services, bringing in Cuban doctors. It's very unclear what people thought the strategic focus was, but they did not invest on single purpose, very clear, limited objective platforms. And those would have made the difference. I think there's going to be, as I do indicate in the article, there's going to have to be a reckoning for this, because we both lost huge parts of our economy apparently for nothing. And it could never have been our strategy to wait for a peak in September. That would be suicide. That was planning for failure, because there's no way you can contain an epidemic once it runs away from you. So this is most definitely not what we should be seeing now. We should have basically been seeing a contained epidemic at this point in time. In the Western Cape, you're seeing a version of that. But in Gauteng, just as a loss of control, and Eastern Cape.
Well, sadly, on the 102nd day, it certainly looks like a deep failure. One hopes that the reckoning will tease out the exact reasons in the future. But now the urgent and pressing need, Alex, is for the government to recognize its shortcomings and failures and to turn things around. What needs to happen from here in order to do that, to ensure that we have a far more cohesive and coordinated prevention, tracking, tracing, and testing response?
But our testing and tracing response can certainly be improved. We're now at a very significant, we are actually testing at scale, but it's just uncoordinated. So it does require that there is a strategy that is attached to what we're doing at a testing level before the cases get completely out of hand. And they are at a level at which it might be impossible for us to properly suppress the epidemic. The other issue strategy that's really quite important is targeting the hotspots. And you can do that while rationing your resources, your testing and screening resources. And so you need to basically test, screen, reasonably contact trace, and you've got people who would be suspected of being cases. You should be self-isolating or quarantining, and you should be monitoring that. So you target the hotspots, and you need a really intensive process to make sure that you're really hammering a hotspot and getting the problem solved. It's basically this: you attack hotspot by hotspot by hotspot. There's no other way at this point. The other key issue is that we're probably we're not putting through the best advice on how to protect our social spaces, our employers, our retail shopping centers, our schools, universities, etc. There has been almost no emphasis on ventilation, for instance. And the latest evidence is just coming out where it's screaming at everybody that it is in fact the virus is airborne, which means that there's a high probability that the virus is aerosolized and not just in droplets. And what that means is that if it's aerosolized, it hangs in the air for long periods of time. So high-risk spaces include toilets because the virus is carried in feces, which means when you flush the toilet, it's aerosolized. It hangs in the space. And if you've got air conditioning that's recirculating the air in that space, it's going to infect you even if you've got PPE. And so the questions have been asked, why are so many doctors and nurses getting it despite the fact that they're fully clothed in PPE? Well, if they go to the loo, that's where they're going to get it. So the issue is ventilation is crucial. I would not go to a restaurant that is not open to the open air. It's a lot safer if you're outside than if you're inside. So you don't see this advice and this messaging anywhere. Our taxis are driving with the windows closed. They don't really have a coherent strategy. They say 70% of people must be in that and some social distancing, but nothing to do with ventilation. So it really doesn't matter if you've got 70% of the passengers rather than 100%. If you're even wearing a mask, but you're there for a long period of time, you're going to get it. So if it's airborne. So this is the risk that has to be managed now.
Professor Alex van den Heuvel, Chair in the field of Social Security Systems Administration and Management Studies at Wits School of Governance, with some very sound advice and analysis of our first 100 days of lockdown.